You know, when I grew up, of course, we were brainwashed that communists are bad and all this, and I'm like, okay. But then I started going to communist countries. I'm like, hold on, ceasefire. They're a lot worse than you ever told me.
It's true. That's why
That
we're
I
here.
became the brainwasher. I'm like, let me tell you what. Communists are worth fighting, like seriously, hardcore, to the death. I don't want them around, right?
We don't
And,
want that to infiltrate our country because it's not, people have no idea how the loss of freedom and the terror. COVID gave us a glimpse of that, I think, in certain areas. Experience the groundbreaking advancements of Leela's quantum technology, now backed by over 40 placebo-controlled studies conducted by elite institutions and renowned universities worldwide. This revolutionary technology surpasses previous achievements, as confirmed by prestigious organizations such as the Emoto Institute in Japan. Scientific investigations reveal that Leela's technology not only enhances blood health and circulation, but also neutralizes the adverse effects of electromagnetic fields, expedites wound healing, and elevates ATP production in human cells. Embrace the extraordinary benefits of Leela's tech as recognized and utilized by world-class athletes, esteemed functional medicine practitioners, and leading figures in the field of biohacking. Explore a range of transformative products from the Heal capsule, shielding you from harmful EMFs, to the Quantum Block, allowing you to infuse frequencies into your cherished possessions. Dive into the realm of innovation and wellness at sarahwestall.com/shop or by following the link below. Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. I have Michael Young coming to the program. He's absolutely amazing. He was a Green Beret and he's trained in psychological operations. He's been studying the borders. He's been all over the world. He understands propaganda. He understands informational warfare. He understands he's been in operations in civil wars to start them and to end them. And we're going to have an amazing conversation it's amazing. It's really long and I'm just going to keep it as one because sometimes when I split them off, this really should be a two-parter. But when I split this off, sometimes people don't watch the second part. So I want the whole thing to be watched. I'm also going to include a donation section for him. Everything he does is on donation. And so you have an opportunity, you can help him keep doing what he's doing. I really hope you stay for the last third of the show because that's where he really gets into the meat of this. So it's really interesting about history and background, everything else. And then we get into this solid meat. I just hope you listen to the whole thing. But before I get into that, I have to talk about my sponsors. That's how I keep myself going. And so what I do is I work on bringing the best people I can find with solutions that work for you and your family. This one is Masterpiece. I've been covering this for a while. I just had them on my show and they've been doing trials. I love the companies that do trials that prove that their stuff works. And I just feel strong about that because then you can have confidence that what you're using is true. It's proven. This, they just did a clinical study showing the levels of heavy metals and microplastics, different nanoparticles, and how effective this is at reducing the levels. It takes a while to get those kinds of things out of your body. And this works on a gentle basis every day. And you have to keep working at it. It's not hardcore. It's something you can take. Plus it has a sea plasma, which is highly nutritious. It's very dense in nutritional elements. So it helps you there as well. The testimonials are incredible on how it's helping people detox their bodies. I just hope you give it a try. They are, if you're a first-time customer, you can join their trial and get product at a reduced rate. I'll have a link for that. And if you're a current customer already, they do have the options that you can get your hair tested and you can see your own levels. They only want to have people in the trial that are new customers because they need a good baseline. So if you've already been using it, it's not going to work as far as the trial, but you can get hair testing yourself and see where you're at and you can see how you're improving as well. So I will have a link below so where you can buy this, or you can go to sarahwestall.com under shop. Okay, let's get into my really, really good conversation with Michael Young. Hi, Michael. Welcome to the program.
Hello. I'm close to the Panama Canal here in the country of Panama, obviously, one of the most important pieces of real estate on earth. I've spent 6 or 7, 8 months here since Biden was installed. Of course, Biden, thankfully, is gone now. And now more dramas unfold. And so that's why I'm back here. I was just actually down in Argentina for a couple of months looking at China issues and other issues in Argentina. Argentina is another vital piece of terrain and what's going to be unfolding, although it's down on the southern part of South America, and I'm in Central America.
You're right above Colombia, right? The Colombia
That's right.
and what's above, I should know this, what's above Panama Canal?
Costa Rica.
Costa
So, I
Rica.
mean,
Yeah, it's
yeah.
sandwiched between the two.
Actually, the Panama Canal goes, it's right out here. It's right out my window. The Panama Canal actually goes north and south, actually. It doesn't actually, a lot of people think it goes
Oh,
east and west
yes.
because
You're right.
kind of misimagine how the map actually is.
Well,
Interesting,
because it's
isn't
the shortest little point because it's a trade route, and instead of it's as we talked about before you got on, it's one of the most important areas in the world for trade, because if you want to get anything from the East, Africa or Asia, instead of going through, or they used to have to go all the way around South America or go around the big ocean. It was a long route, and when they made the Panama Canal, it totally changed the world economy.
it did. It opened in 1914, which happened to be the year that nitrogenous fertilizer started to be produced in Germany at Ludwigshafen at the BASF plant. Actually, I went there a couple of times before
Wow.
Nord Stream got interrupted. A lot of the dramas that we see in the world, not just now, but historically, they're about routes and resources, right? There
That's
are
right.
wars for religion, of course, and that sort of thing. There are many, but often even those are masking wars about routes and resources, right?
And
And so
the dollar, well, the global monetary system is about controlling routes and resources too, if you want to expand it to that, but go ahead.
right. I mean, there's so many dimensions to this. There's no, I mean, it's as deep, it's like medicine or physics. It's as deep as you can go, right? You know? And there's some basics to it, the skeletal system, like the routes, like the old Silk Road is still there, right? And the old trade routes are just always evolving. But many of the old routes are the same now as they are nearly the same now as they were then. Like actually, the idea of building a Panama Canal is very old. I mean, the Scottish were here in the late 1600s and 1698-ish, somewhere around there. They were down in Darien, where in the Darien Gap, where I spend so much time. This is called the Isthmus of Darien or the Isthmus of Panama, right? But down in the Darien Gap, which is the area that connects Panama with Colombia, the Scottish tried to make a donkey and man porter route between the seas, between the Pacific and the Atlantic side, the Caribbean side, right? And they went bankrupt. And that's how in 1706, if my memory is accurate, that's how Scotland became part of the United Kingdom. They went bankrupt building their Darien project. And then in the Articles of Union, and I think 1706, they were, that's why they're part of the United Kingdom today. They went bankrupt due to the Darien project. Then the French came in. They tried to build a canal. I'm not sure if they were really trying to build a canal or it was a giant fraud. It's kind of hard to untangle those things. We've studied them quite a lot, actually, because, the French, took credit for the Suez Canal and that sort of thing. And De Lesseps was over here, still a very well-known name here. But it seemed like they put up more statues than engineering stakes, Bottom line is France also ended up bankrupt for their Panama Canal project, which was doomed for failure from the beginning, actually. They were due to various reasons. But then the United States came in, and there's an incredible book about this called The Path Between the Seas. I've read it, and actually, one of my research partners who flew in a few weeks ago, he's reading it now. And so there's three of us who study that book and a few others each night now for the last couple of weeks. And because we're, increasing all of our group knowledge on what's going on here. So it's important to have that historical background. But The Path Between the Seas, we're actually going through the book again. Another good book that has some interesting parts about the Panama Canal is actually The creature from Jekyll Island, the keep the you know the book
Yep.
that keeps on giving. G. Edward Griffin contacted me a few months ago, actually, and I went on a show. G. Edward Griffin, of course, is the author of the incredible book, The Creature from Jekyll Island. Everybody should read that book. There's a section in The Creature from Jekyll Island about the Panama Canal and why we really gave it to Panama. A lot of people say we gave it back to Panama, but that's like saying we reconstructed Afghanistan. Afghanistan was never really constructed, and we didn't give it back. We actually created the Panama Canal from scratch. Now, actually, we created Panama from scratch as well, because where I'm sitting now used to be part of Colombia, but we sponsored an insurrection and broke it off into become Panama. But actually, if you want to take that back a step further, the Spaniards took it from the Indians who are still here.
So
There's
the
seven.
land used to be Colombia, or used to be the Indians, right?
It
And then
used
that
to, the
was.
Indians still have a lot of it. Like, I'm down with the Indians all the time, down in Darien Gap, and they have major they call them Comarcas here, Comarca, which is a reservation. I'm out with the Imbara Indians all the time because they're down in the Darien, and also and the Kuna, I'm out with them. They're in the Darien, as are the Wunan. I don't go out with the Wunan quite as much, but because of the routes. But the actually the first town in the on the mainland of the Americas, not on one of the islands, but on the mainland of the Americas, was in the Darien. And it was formed in 1510, and it was called Santa Maria de I'm sorry, Santa Maria la Antigua del Darien, of the Darien, right? So it was there for about 14 years down on the Colombia side of the Darien Gap. So it's called Santa Maria la Antigua del Darien. It was there for about 14 years. Then the indigenous people destroyed it because they didn't like the Spaniards. And I think it was the Imbara that destroyed it, actually, the Indians that I'm out with all the time. But I'm still digging into that to make sure. But I'm pretty sure it was the Imbara. But the Imbara Indians have a lot of land in Colombia. They have a lot of, and so do the Kuna. And the Kuna tell me when I'm out with Kuna, they're like, we're taking Colombia back. That's ours, you know. So in other words, this idea that, you know, Colombia owns Panama. Well, actually, the Indians say we own it all. You know,
Well, for
there's
sure.
always
That's
these
what
layers, right?
they always say that, right? It's kind of like, yes, exactly. I told you before we got on that my grandfather was a colonel in the Air Force and he was stationed down there. He was an engineer. I don't know why he was stationed there. I guess I didn't get all the information. I was clueless to ask back then. But my dad was a little boy and he grew up for part of his childhood in the Panama Canal. And he was this little towhead, white-haired, blonde-haired kid running around with the Native, the Indians. I don't know what you call them. They're not Native Americans. What is the proper term that they like to be called?
There's at least seven major groups here. I'm out with two of them, mostly Imbara and Nakuna, but there's others as well. So there's numerous, and not all of them came from here. They, when you talk with Kuna and Imbara, they talk about their wars together and da 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 da. Right? It's the endless history that fades to gray. You can never really
That's
tell,
right.
you know.
Yeah.
And
Can you just call
so
them native then? Because it's like, what do you call
they call them, the Imbara people call themselves Imbara, which means the
them?
people,
They
right?
call themselves, okay.
So and again, I'm out with them all the time. I mean, I've been in 25 or 30 of their villages, quite a lot, right? I spent months out with them. At one point, a few years ago, I was out in one of their villages because I spend a lot of time out with them alone, actually. Not I'm it's like me, I'm the only white guy and I'm out with a bunch of Imbara. But at one point I was eating with them and they're like, you know, you are like Imbara. And I'm like, you're like my grandparents, only more brown, you know. They all laughed.
Well, yeah,
They
that's what
are.
they're just whatever. That's what my dad would say. I don't know. We were just little kids all hanging around each other.
I mean, because when I went to Army Survival School, I was like, wait a minute, I learned all this stuff from my grandfather, you know. So you know, when I'm out with the Imbara, I'm like, hey, there's a crocodile right there. I can spot them as
Oh,
fast
that's
as they can,
cool.
because I used to catch alligators with my
Oh, my
hands and that sort of
God.
stuff, you know. So when I'm out with the Imbara, I just like, I mean, you know, I'm not an indigenous American or something, but I get along with them. But I get along with farmers all over the world. It
You get
doesn't
along
even
with
matter who they are.
everybody. I
Yeah,
would have a feeling.
farmers are easy to get along with. It doesn't even Taliban farmers. You know what I mean? You're out. I mean, I spent 2 years in Afghanistan, and at one point I was out with these farmers, and I'm like, these guys are straight up Taliban. It's just me with them, right? And I'm like, but they're actually just farmers, because you know what farmers always want to talk about? They want to talk about their grandchildren. They want to talk about the rain. They want to talk about these bugs that are eating the leaves on their plants.
That's
They want to
right.
talk about stuff like
If
that.
they're
They want
true farmers, if they're not like
yeah.
a activist Taliban guy that does farming on the side, but if they're a farmer, then the politics is just something they're stuck with, kind of, right?
Yeah, they're just, and they're tribal, so that just like the Imbara are tribal. They have their actually a friend of mine. He's actually a white American, but he grew up here in the Darien, and he's actually one of the tribal leaders with
Wow.
the Imbara. I just talked with him this morning. Actually, we talk all. I've been out in the jungle with him so much, but he grew up in the Darien because his parents were missionaries. So he said when
Yep.
he grew up in the Darien, he kind of loved it and he hated it. He's like, why aren't I out with the American kids? I'm out here in the jungle. But now he realizes it's like a gift from God that he grew up out there. He lived in America a lot too later in his life, and then he came back to Panama. That's interesting because when you look at the Darien Gap, if you look it up, you'll see all these articles about it's the most dangerous jungle in the world, which actually is pretty dangerous. But a lot of the Imbara, they go up to places like the United States. Like one of the tribal leaders, his name is Francisco Agape. I've been with him to Washington, D.C., talking with congressmen and senators and all that. I took him out with one of my Green Beret teammates and stayed at his house and took him shooting and stuff. But he went to the University of Oregon or some university up in Oregon. And I mean, Francisco Agape did. He's a mayor of 28 or so Imbara villages. And he actually then moved back from Oregon to Darien, right? So, how dangerous is it? He likes Darien. I like Darien. I like birds and I like, farmers. So for me, it's saddening to watch the Chinese cutting the Darien down. They're stealing the trees. Actually, I say stealing. Let me be careful with that because a lot of the Imbara are and Kuna and Wunan, those are the three groups down there, are very much against cutting down any trees. And then there's others who are keen on just selling them off. And they sell those trees at like $20 to $40 each. Huge trees. And then these
Gosh.
coca bola trees are more like, unless the price has changed in the last year or so, they're more like $2,000 per ton. But most of the trees, these beautiful, unbelievable trees, this incredible jungle is just being cut down there. And
That's
the
too bad.
Chinese are hauling it up.
How long does it
And
take to grow one of those big trees?
I mean, the jungle, more appropriately, how long does it take to grow the jungle? The jungle is like irreplaceable and it's being absolutely destroyed. And I mean, it's unbelievable. This is the most, I've been to a lot of jungles around the world. I always love jungles and that sort of thing. Some people are afraid of them, and you have to respect them. The jungles are like the sea. They take no prisoners. It takes no sides. You know what I mean? And but if you're out there with people who are familiar with that particular jungle, which is important, it's not people who are familiar with jungles, but people who are familiar with that jungle, right? Because different
Yeah,
jungles
can see
are
that.
different jungles. And like the jungles in Bangladesh, the dangers there are completely different than the dangers here, right? But the bottom line is the jungle is being destroyed, right? As
That's
is the
just,
Amazon. You know
that's too
what's
bad.
weird is I'm largely on the side of the tree huggers on a lot of these sorts of things, but then they lose their minds and they're all about the global warming and all this other
I
nonsense
know that
crap.
I
You
agree
know
with
what I'm
you.
saying?
Yeah, it's like, well, if you pay attention to the stuff that's really important, we could actually solve some of this. But you're talking about carbon and plant food. And if you cared about the trees, you wouldn't be wanting to reduce carbon.
Yeah, exactly.
It's
And
a come on.
they don't say a word about the Darien Gap being cut down. They don't say a word. And the Greenpeace guys, and on one level, I actually agree with those people. But on
I know.
another, they're out there acting
I
like
know.
drug-addled idiots. You know what I mean? Like
I
they
get it.
deface the Nazca lines. They deface
That's
the Nazca lines.
exactly what I think. Yes. So let's talk about a couple series. I had a family from Colombia who they owned the largest shipping company in Colombia in the 60s and 70s. And then the Bush family came in. And he has this whole story about how the drug trade came in, and they don't like the Bush family, and the Bushes notoriously owns a lot of shipping lanes, and they were active in the Panama, and Somebody, they should go look. I published that one on my Substack. It was deleted off YouTube years ago, but that's an interesting history. So the people there, I heard you on another podcast talk about how China, how the people there don't trust China. Question is, do they trust the United States when we have a history of like what the Bushes did down there? Has the United States changed enough in their eyes where they trust us, or where is this, do they trust either of us? Just a brief interruption to the program to talk to you about peptides. I'm working with Dr. Diane Kaiser to bring you guys peptides. I'll have a link below. So if you have any questions on any of this, you can join her tribe for $1 and get all your questions answered. But I have some exciting ones to bring to you. I'm using them too. I have this anti-aging one that works wonders on helping the cell generation and building up your collagen. And then I have the retatrutide, if I pronounced that right. The retatrutide has shown in studies, it's amazing. In 36 weeks, in human trials, have shown an average of 24% reduction in body weight. Incredible. And then I have another one, SLUPP-332. That one you can get in capsules. I call it the moron proof because you can get it in capsules. You don't have to inject yourself. It's not nasal spray. But that one is making in the bodybuilding industry is just game changer because in mice in the trials, it showed a 12% reduction in body weight in 4 weeks. It mimics exercise. They're seeing 70% greater endurance. I mean, it's just incredible. It's taking that industry by storm, and you can get it in capsules. And I have a link below as well. I'm very excited about this. So I hope you join me in this journey and try some of these peptides. Okay, so I have the link below, or you can go to sarahwestall.com under shop.
Well, weirdly, I feel more welcome here than I do in California. And I went to school in California.
That's
Nice,
probably
actually.
true.
Actually, California is largely conservative, actually. It's not,
You're right.
believe
Yeah.
it or not,
You're talking
California is
certain
not.
areas.
Yeah, exactly. Like I went to school in San Francisco and that sort of thing. But I'm quite familiar with California. I spent a couple of years running around. I used to love California. And still a lot of the Californians are hardcore Americans, In Panama, they're very pro-American. One of my friends here, he grew up in the Panama Canal Zone, so he's called a Zonian. I'll actually be out with them tomorrow as they cross through the canal. They're having a reunion. But anyway, he also grew up partly in Vermont, but mostly in Panama. And so when he's up in Vermont, somebody was asking him about anti-American stuff down in Panama. And my friend Matt Tomlitz, his name, he would be a great guy for you to talk with, actually. But Matt said, he said that there's very few Panamanians who are anti-Americans, maybe 15%, something like that, And but in Vermont, the Vermontian said, this is like 90% of the Vermontians or whatever they call themselves are anti-American. And I've been to Vermont several times. It's another great place, but it's been besieged by the information war.
That's
So,
right.
like in countries that I go to, whether Germany, I used to live in Germany, ich spreche Deutsch, Englisch, I speak German, Germans tend to be very anti-German. I was giving a speech in Tokyo in maybe 2014. Maybe you can find it online. And I was talking with I was talking with a bunch of journalists and historians and stuff in an auditorium, and to all Japanese. And I said, I've been around this world, and I'm always asking people, what's your favorite country? What countries do you not like? And actually, the two most favorite countries clearly around the world are the United States and Japan. Period. Full
Really,
stop. Oh
Japan.
yeah, for sure. And across Asia, keep in mind, I spent about 19 years in Asia. I've been in about 25 Asian countries. So I said to them, and I've been to China quite a lot, and India, of course, and all that. So I asked this big group, and you could probably find it online when I'm asking them. And I said, there's only three countries that don't like Japan. Do you know what those countries are?
China.
And China, and they were like
But that's
China.
because of the Chinese-Japanese war, right? That started it and all the tension they
And
have,
there's
like
more
back and
to it than
forth.
that. China
I'm
doesn't really
sure.
get along. China doesn't get along with anybody, right? It's like, I mean,
Okay.
there is no neighbor that likes China. And there are none. I mean, there's people that get along with them, but it's China, right? And so, and I'm not talking about Taiwan. That's different. Taiwanese are different. You know what I mean? I've spent a lot of time there as well. I was there last year. But so it's not Chinese people. It's China. You know, especially Han
That's for
Chinese,
sure, because
Chinese Communist Party.
I was in China for 3 weeks in 2019. We're the last tourists out of China, and so I spent a lot of time talking to Chinese people there, and the people are great. There's a fear though. I noticed there was have you been to China a couple of times? I'm assuming there's just
Like a
this,
year.
but there's a fear of their government, of the authority. We sense that clearly.
More broadly, like communism. Like I lived, ich spreche Deutsch, you know, I speak German. I lived in Germany for about 4 years, right? So I've been in East Germany when it was still East Germany, and I lived in West Germany, and I lived in Poland for another couple of years. I'm pretty familiar with Europe as well, right? And so, East Germany, communist. The East Germans were very different when it was communist. I didn't like East Germans back then, right? I
Were
didn't
they
like them at
just were they
all.
ha were they cold and different? I mean, what was the
Yeah, they
Because the fear, it was the fear.
suspicious of everything, right? And so they were hard to get along with, right? But the West Germans I could get along with quite well. And so this is the same people. One's under communism and one is not.
That's
And
right.
the Polish as well.
Well, I
You know,
was in Berlin. Not to, I want you to continue, but I was in Berlin when I was young, when Checkpoint Charlie was still there. And we spent like a month or something touring that area. And I remember I was 18, and I remember walking through Checkpoint Charlie, and then we had to walk until we got to the tourist area, which was made for tourists. And so we had to walk a good couple miles, and it was still left like it was after World War II, like all the propaganda and everything. They hadn't touched it. It was a buffer zone. West Berlin was just like I felt like I was in the United States. I just happened to speak German. But I remember walking through East Berlin, and to get to Berlin, this is even more like it. To get to Berlin, we had to go through East Germany. And I remember the drive through East Ber Germany as black and white. It was like we were in color in Germany. I don't remember. That's how I
That's
remember the
exactly right.
whole.
I know exactly what you mean. You went from color to black. I know exactly what you mean. Yeah. And it smells bad. Every
I couldn't
communist
believe
country I
it.
went to smells bad.
Well, and then when we were in East Berlin, we went to a supermarket, and there were like a couple pieces of fruit, and they were kind of rot, bruised. I mean, it was just not pleasant. And they said that they put their best out for the tourists to give a good front for the people who are touring. And I was, they wanted us to see that. They wanted us to see that their best was still not even close to what we enjoy on a daily basis.
Oh yeah, I mean, you know, when I grew up, of course, we were brainwashed that communists are bad and all this, and I'm like, okay, but then I started going to communist countries. I'm like, hold on, ceasefire. They're a lot worse than you ever told me.
It's true. That's why I
That I
remember.
became the brainwasher. I'm like, let me tell you what, communists are worth fighting, like seriously, hardcore to the death. I don't want them around, right?
We don't
And
want that to infiltrate our country because it's
right.
not, people have no idea the loss of freedom and the terror. COVID gave us a glimpse of that, I think, in certain areas.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, and just, you know, I grew up going to the First Nazarene Church in Winter Haven, Florida. My grandparents helped build it, right? And Winter Haven is right in the middle of Florida. And they used to talk, you know, you can't have maps in communist countries. And this all sounded really kooky to me. You know, like, can't have maps? You know, we can buy a map at the gasoline station. You know, it's like, but then when it was true. All these things were true. And it was truly worse. Like Reagan used to joke about the communists, like, you know, you want the plumber and you have to schedule 14 years in advance or something. These things are actually true. These are not. This isn't fake, right? I mean, I lived in Poland for a couple of years during that transition. I was in Czechoslovakia when it was still Czechoslovakia. It was still communist. I was in East Germany when it was still communist. I was in Romania. Romania, good Lord. And but you know, And I just learned. So I went back, and I went back to that church I grew up in. I said, hold on, it's worse. It's worse than you ever tried to scare me into believing. Let me give you an upgrade here. Update your information. I mean, we need to fight these people anywhere we find them, right? We don't want this infection in our country, because I've seen it. And the people, they have their a huge amount of them are just drunks. And the communist countries, they're all drunk, not all, but just like almost everybody is on drunk on vodka all the time, which is one of the ways you brainwash people is with intoxicants, right? I mean, whether it's marijuana now and all these different things, you know, marijuana, what's marijuana? Marijuana is just an ingredient in these things now, right? Whether it's opium, cocaine, or whatever, the intoxicants are the grease of psychological operations. And I find this in old books that I read old
That's
books
interesting.
constantly,
That's what
right?
they did. The Native Americans here.
Hola, buenas. The cleaning lady's here. So.
Oh, okay. The Native Americans in our country were, there's evidence to show that in order to control them, they fed them alcohol to get them,
That's right.
you know.
That's right. And the
Yes.
missionaries were always standing up to that. Like I found this one book called In Far Formosa, written by a Canadian missionary named McKay. I think he was a dentist, I think. And so Formosa, of course, was Taiwan. And he was out. I mean, the indigenous people in Taiwan or Formosa at the time, they were straight up like headhunters and cannibals, like no kidding. But actually, this missionary, he was McKay. I'm pretty sure his name is McKay. I found the book in Taiwan, actually. That's where I bought it. But he said, you know, that they were actually very civilized, except for the whole headhunting part, you know. And he said,
For them, oh boy.
you can't
Okay.
make up this stuff. And I love reading old stuff by missionaries. And he said that, but then the wily Chinese traders, that's what he called them, would bring in their intoxicants and just destroy the communities. And likewise, I found a book in Argentina a couple months ago, and it was from 1648, reprinted in the 20s. And it was talking about how Spaniards in Guatemala would use alcohol to get the Indians just as drunk as they can get them and just rob them blind, right? And so the missionaries were always standing up, whether that be whatever country, whether it was the Opium Wars and China. The Chinese are always, by the way, blaming everybody else for the two Opium Wars. But China had an opium problem before the Opium Wars, during the Opium Wars, and still does. And they still blame it on the British, right? It the
Well,
fact is,
but I could see the British did help it along.
yes, they did. And I just read another book on it. I just finished reading it 2 or 3 days ago on the Opium Wars, actually, because this is something that pops up. I study information war. I've written 3 books on Chinese information war that are unfortunately only in Japanese, but because I've been working to
Ooh,
wake up
that's too bad.
Japanese
We
for many
gotta,
years.
yeah, we gotta get them into English. That would be helpful.
But I was targeting Japanese so that they would be aware of what's because Japan is a very important ally of the United States, and it's very important to keep your neighbors strong, right? Your allies strong,
Yeah.
and they're trying to weaken our friends and allies. Like in Thailand, there's drug stores. I mean, drugs like cannabis. Like I used to have an office in Thailand in Chiang Mai, but now I just went back there some months ago looking at Chinese things that they're doing, and now there's more than 9,000 cannabis licenses have been granted in about the last 2 years. As of about maybe 5 months ago, it was about 9,400. So it's probably over 10,000 now because they're just flooding these stores everywhere, right? And this is a direct attack on the Thai people to split Thailand apart, right? The Chinese are behind a lot of this, and I've been exposing it. And you know, anyway, I could go on for hours
Well,
about this, but.
it's kind of like our drug war. You can't like you could say we could say China's behind this fentanyl issue, but you could also point and say, well, we're a bunch of idiots too because we're the ones making a lot of money on the drugs, and the Americans are very involved. You have to admit.
Yeah, I mean,
So you
Trump
could
was trying
point
to.
finger, you know, with the Bush family and all this stuff, with Panama, you know, with the Colombia and stuff. You could point fingers at the United States and say, no, you guys are at fault for your own drug mess because there's no reason why you let these people in. That's what is the same thing with China, I would think, with the opium.
Well, with the, you know, one of the things I found is that professional victims are always predators. I've never seen an exception to that, whether that be an individual person or a family or an actual cultural firmware of professional victimhood, right? And the Chinese, not the Taiwanese, actually. And I didn't see it among the Hong Kongers. I spent a lot of time in Hong Kong as well. I haven't seen it among the Singaporean Chinese. Because keep in mind, China is a big word, right? It's like,
Yes.
is Chinese. That's like trying to define what's an Arab, right? It's the people that don't know anything about Arabs can define Arab very quickly. The people that know a lot more have a hard time defining Arab. Just the same with Chinese, right? But so the bottom line is the Chinese Communist Party uses victimhood as a weapon. But actually, the Chinese were already intoxicating their own people. They had their own drug. They had their own drug industry before the British got involved. Then the British got involved in those two wars. But keep in mind, a lot of the people that were fighting against the drug war in China the most were actually other British, right? There were
That
other
makes
British that
sense.
just weren't. Oh yeah, there were a lot of British. It wasn't like it was the British against the Chinese. That's false. It was a lot of Chinese that were doing the drug trade and still do. And they also sell it to, you can read the book Rape of the Mind, and it talks about how the Chinese are flooding
Well,
Thailand or
they had to
taking
let the
Thailand.
British in order to do it. It was the Chinese distributors. I mean, the British didn't go in there and distribute it all. It was the Chinese that distributed it using the British as a. You know, it's always the local people that help bring it in.
It's like everything. The more you know about it, the less clear it becomes. And you start to see that there is who's benefiting from the opium. For instance, the US government clearly has been involved in various drug trades around the world.
That's right.
Yeah. And it's
And
like
the one here
whatever.
going on now with fentanyl.
Clearly, no question about it. And so, I mean, they're allowing it to happen. President Trump, well, back when he was last year, was pushing to legalize the cannabis stores in Florida, right? The Amendment 3, right? And when I stood up against that, people were like, oh, you're a boomer. They always throw the boomer word around, So, okay, whatever. Let me tell you what. And they're very quick. The potheads are very quick to their blood pressure is spiking right now, right? As they hear me say pothead and doper, they will immediately be jumping through the screen to correct me, like, you don't know what dope is. Dope is marijuana. Da 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 da. Okay, Rambo. I've heard this like 1,000 times now. It's more like this. Dope is an old Dutch word. It means like gravy or like a putty, right? Dope was used for opium, right? Opium, right? So it's not marijuana. Then it came to dope head, pot head, pill head, meth head, whatever, drug head, addict, whatever, right? So I mean, all these different words like. Dope is a catch-all phrase. I found an article about 3 or 4 days ago in a 1925 newspaper. It was a letter to an editor. It was an American newspaper, 1925, so 101 years ago or so. And he said he'd been treating addictions for 40 years, right? So a medical doctor. And he said that, and he called these catch-all. He said he was talking about dope, and he was very clear. Including cocaine, because cocaine, United States had a huge cocaine problem in the 1800s and early 90s. This is nothing new, right? The people that
Well,
are
that
new
used
to
to be
it were.
used for cocaine used to be used for pain, and then it caused problems beyond that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you could go into a general store and buy, a bottle of whiskey, some cocaine, a shotgun, and some dynamite. You know what I mean? It's like, those are good old days, and some coffin nails next door, right? So I mean, but the cocaine it has been and continues. But what I'm getting to is the word dope has become a catch-all phrase, and it was more than 100 years ago. So when I use the word dope, and the potheads try to correct me, they just don't study. They're too busy doing pot, right? The word dope is a catch-all phrase meaning all of those things. But the current dope heads, of which a subset is potheads. Which what is really in that pot, but keep in mind when we talk about the war on drugs, there's also a war with drugs as WMD. Again, I want to be very clear. One of the major weapons in war is intoxicants, whether that be
That's right.
alcohol, whether that be this doctor from the 1925 letter to the editor. It was a long letter. It was very interesting. He said, actually, the worst that he's seen, this is 1925, he was saying was tobacco. He said that, and he went on to explain his position on that. Of course, back then, tobacco I mean, the cocaine probably didn't have all kinds of chemicals in it, and it might not have been readily available. I don't know. But the bottom line is, he said tobacco was terrible because it was causing problems for the unborn children. And when the children were born, they were very irritable. They were very more susceptible as they grew up to being becoming
Sick.
addicted to alcohol and tobacco and the other drugs like opium and cocaine. He talks about this in that letter to the editor, and it was very intelligently written, as a lot of the people wrote in the old days, and it sounded quite credible, actually. Anyway, I don't know, I wasn't
Well,
there.
let's talk a little bit about, and then we can go on to some other topics, but the marijuana and CBD, drugs and things, they know that there's some serious advantages in the medical industry for using this. And
Well,
so it's
that's what they
kind of,
use to get it. That's the cracker of, but don't you know
that's
it
the
has,
propaganda. That's
they always try
right.
to go, they're always like, but don't you know it has thousands of medical uses, as they're pulling on their bong with Dope or Joe Rogan and
So
Elon Musk's space boy, you know?
good. Let's
Yeah.
use the medical reasons and the
Right.
medical stuff, but
But
don't
that's not why they want
intoxicate
it.
everybody.
That's
Yeah,
not why they
so
want it. They
that
want it
makes
to be
sense.
high. And when you talk with them, it all comes out every single time. That's not why they want it. They want it so that they can be dope heads. And the dope heads, that's why they will defend those bongs more than they'll defend our border, right? I've been across the entire southern U.S. border. I'm like, where's
Interesting.
the men? Where's the men? You know, there's very few. Most of the people I go to the border with are American women and Japanese too, Misako Gunaha. I mean, there's
Well,
like,
it's because they're so worried about the human trafficking. The women are
yeah.
just beside themselves on what it's doing. And then the fentanyl. I mean, everybody knows people who've
Yeah.
had kids die, taking fentanyl. So I think the
How many
women
per
are,
month? 10,000? 10,000 a
yeah,
month?
it's
I didn't know.
horrible. I would
Right.
like to see more men standing up in general, but it's just community type stuff. We should be able to be shoulder to shoulder with the women
Yeah.
and men together fighting for our communities. I mean, it's not like it's a male female thing. That's a kind of all BS. But
But
I
a
want.
lot of the people I've taken into the Darien Gap, there's been a lot of men I've taken as well. I've taken 50 or 60 people. I took Brett
Yeah.
Weinstein and you know, a couple of congressmen, Epoch Times, a lot of people, right?
That's good that they're
But about
waking up.
half of them have been women. About half have been women. Yeah.
Well, that's good. Well, and that's what I mean. Shoulder to shoulder fixing our country and not
Yep.
turning it into something kind of weird. It's like we all are dealing with it. We all have to live here, so let's all work together. But let's talk about some of the war zones. Well, first of all, before we move on, the Panama, why you care so much about the Panama Canal is because, oh, Trump really wants to get back control of it, right? And there's also some weird stuff with Iceland. He wants to buy Iceland. Can you talk about that and why and how that makes sense from a global trade standpoint and why it's so important?
Right. Well, he's talking about Greenland,
A
but also,
Greenland. I was confused.
but next door to
Yeah.
Iceland, or not far
Yeah, they
away.
changed the names. Actually, there's an interesting history. They called Iceland was the one that was farther north, or Greenland's the one farther north, Iceland's the one farther south, and they did it on purpose to confuse travelers. And I guess like it was,
Worked.
it worked. Anyways, keep going.
Simple plan.
Yeah.
But actually, there are other key, there are many vital places or very important places like the Azores, Iceland, Greenland, Panama, of course, Puerto Rico. There's so many, Hawaii, right?
Yep.
Poland, right?
Yep.
Netherlands.
Yep.
There's a lot of places that are quite important. And I've been to the Azores, actually, interestingly. But Greenland, Misako Gunaha and I, the Japanese journalist who I'll be seeing later. Wow, it's starting to rain here, who I'll be seeing later today. I mean, she lives on, and by the way, on Okinawa, which is another vital keystone. I mean, that's a huge battleground in World War II. All of these old battlegrounds will come to pass again. But the bottom line is, we went to Canada last year. Misako Gunaha and I did, and we left Panama. We went to Bahamas. Because Bahamas is, I mean, China has a big port right off the Florida coast, like
Yeah,
it's a big
yeah.
port, right? And we spent, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks there or so. Then we flew up to Canada, and we went because, you know, Bahamas is a fourth border. A lot of Americans don't realize that. And China has a big port right off the coast of Florida, right? I mean, they could launch, you know, like medium-sized drones and hit Florida with them, right? And not to mention the ships. And so we went to Canada. We went to Toronto, which is just being overrun. Then we went to Yellowknife, which is the Northwest Territories, 250 miles from the Arctic Circle. We went up to Yellowknife. If you look up Yellowknife, it's again 250 miles from the Arctic Circle. It's filled with like Afghans, Pakistanis, Nigerians. They've been flooded with the invasions that the United Nations is doing, and Canada is helping, and the United States is helping. And this is all about destroying and dissolving Canada and the United States and Europe and taking over these trade routes and taking over these resources, right? And so from there, we then went. We left Yellowknife, stayed up there, I don't know, less than 2 weeks, I would say. Went, talked with many people. Then we went down to Vancouver, went to Chinatown. We went into the Chinese police station there. There's a Chinese police station there, right in the open. Walked in, talked with them. And then out on the streets, outside from the Chinese police station, is just a huge amount of stooped over zombie drug addicts, right? And then we walked
With the
into an
drug
office.
addicts, are those Canadians, or would you say
Canadians.
they're okay?
They're mostly white people, Canadians.
Okay.
And so we walked into this sort of office where they're actually handing out hard drugs. And Misako and I walked in, they kicked us out.
For
It's like
free?
a, yeah. And the United States does
Wow.
it too. And so we walked in there, they kicked us out. We've got some video. Everybody, one guy stooped over at the front door trying to light his
Is
pipe or whatever.
that the Is that the craziness where they were giving away drugs as an excuse to help the homeless get out of drugs?
Yeah, and then it's a
That was the
whole
excuse because
industrial.
California was doing that. And I remember their propaganda around that was to help the homeless get off drugs there and get off the drug addicted people. They would give them drugs.
If I wrote a couple of dispatches from Afghanistan in about 2006 called The Perfect Evil, right? The Perfect Evil. And I described this dynamic where it's like the perfect. It's artistic evil, basically. They sell the drugs to the Canadians, take their money and get that, and then it leaves them, destroys their families. Like all these libertarians are like, we should be able to do all the drugs they want. And they go crazy when I say no. And they're like, oh, you're against freedom. You're supposed to be pro-freedom. I'm like, what have you ever done, Rambo, except defend your bong, right? I mean, seriously,
Well,
are you defending our borders?
I
Right.
agree with you, but here's the deal. I'm more of a libertarian oriented too. But the point is this is where I think everybody gets confused on it, is you can do whatever you want until you start hurting others. The
Right.
hurting others is what they forget about.
One drug addict in your family, one alcoholic, one drug addict. There's a casino right out my window right here, right? One gambling addict is like getting a missile through your roof of your house, right? If your father or your mother is a gambling addict or an alcoholic or heavily on drugs, your family, you might as well just burn your house down, right? I mean, it's just, and that's one person exercising their freedom and destroying our life, right?
I
So
have
you
a
don't.
harder time with, and I agree with you. This is my personal beliefs, is that the evil is the people supplying it and making money off of it and enticing them. And the people doing it, I have a hard time saying they can't do it. But I don't have a hard time saying you can't make money and hurt people and manipulate people into it, which is
When
what
you
we're
look at
doing.
this, I'm looking at this from also chiefly as a war perspective. If I want to destroy your
That's
country,
right. That's right.
I will get you addicted, and then I will, because remember, addictive substances, whether that be alcohol or whatever, are the key to psychological operations, right? That is how you destroy the Native Americans, right? Measles helps and all that stuff. But the addictive substances, that's how you dissolve entire cultures and they vanish from the face of the earth without so much as a whimper, right? And it happens all the time. It's happening right now. Like right now, there's been four Imbaroa suicides since November, and they didn't even have any of those before. They don't remember any suicides. Each one of them, they hang themselves, right? And these are in villages that I'm always out in. Three of them were in a village called Bajo Chiquito, and one's in a village a few miles away called Marangante. These are deep in the Darien Gap. And why? And I asked the village people there, why are the young people committing suicide? Drugs and alcohol. That's what they say,
That's probably.
drugs and alcohol, right? And they didn't have, because with the invasions of the invaders coming through, which Trump finally called them invaders, which is what I've been saying for years now, this is an invasion, it's not migration, right? They brought a lot of money. The United Nations and the United States brought a lot of money, and the young people stop farming, they start doing drugs, and start raping and killing out in the jungle, and now it's dissolving the Mbarrah people. The Chinese are taking their trees and a lot. So when we get back down to the war aspects of this, if I want to destroy your country, Thailand, if somebody wants to destroy Thailand, the first thing you're going to do is grease the right palms and say, look how much money you can make by opening up all these opium stores. We'll just sell it to the tourists, is what they're saying. That's what they're actually saying when I ask them. I'm like, no, you're not. This is a direct attack. And first of all, what makes it okay to sell it to the neighbor's kids anyway? You know what I
What do
mean?
you think about
Like,
the exactly? But what do you think about all the small towns that were targeted for the opiates, and it just like destroyed families?
prescriptions.
The
Yeah, I mean, I
prescription
used to go.
opiates that destroyed small towns across this country. I mean, families in small towns across the country.
I lived in Andrews, North Carolina. There's like very few people have ever heard of it. It's near Murphy. I lived out there almost a couple of years, right? And that's like, they had huge drug problems. I thought when I went out there, these are going to be people that are, living, there's like more than about me. Am I right to remember 22 churches and about 2,000 people or so, right? You might think, and yet it was just filled with drugs and alcohol. And it was actually the, it was,
It was like
go
they were
ahead.
tearing down the salt and earth of this country. All the people who were more down to earth were being destroyed.
And remember, you only have to take out one person in that family. That's it. That's it. If you got a family of eight people or whatever, you take one out, the next thing you know, the whole family's melting down. It's very destructive. It's like one little fire in one of the rooms,
That's right.
Okay. And so if you're going to destroy a country, you're going to use intoxicants, right? And then that opens the door to psychological warfare on an epic scale. And so you're dissolving their resiliency, right? The resiliency goes down, down, down. And then you'll reach some critical mass where, and basically actually down in, there's a deep part of me that's somewhat libertarian as well, but that's a loaded term because libertarian
I
is like
know.
conservative. It has many different meanings. But
I
I'm all
know.
about freedom. I've been fighting, actually fighting for freedom, like really fighting for freedom, like actually risking my life for years online. It's a wonder I'm alive. I'm not just defending somebody's right to be a dope head.
Well,
The other night, my
exactly. I
kid,
mean, freedom takes responsibility, right? It's
I
not
have a
mean
right to
you
free
being.
speech. I have a right to free speech to tell them you're a dope head and I don't like you, right? That's my free speech. I fought for that freedom, really fought for it, right?
Yes.
And the other night, like 3 nights ago, we were driving down the road, my research team and I, and there's some drug addicts, clear zombies, nighttime, wet road. One of them just steps right back out on the road. We almost hit him. It was that close. He just stepped back out into the road. We swerved and missed him. Now, as we left, I said, now imagine how would we have handled that if we hit him? Because it was that close, right? How would we have handled it? He was surrounded by other drug addicts. It's nighttime, it's dark, and we're in a very bad part. Are we going to stop and help him, or are we going to hit and run and go to the police or whatever? What are you going to do? I mean, we could literally be in prison right now because some drug addict stepped out in our car at night. So we have a choice. Stop and help this zombie, surrounded by other zombies who almost certainly have knives, or we can hit and run. What are you going to do? This is your decision. That was a real
Was
decision the other night
self-defense.
we
What did you
almost had to
do?
make. We didn't hit him. I mean, it was
Oh,
just
very
close.
good. Oh, very good.
But it was close. It was close. And it was just like we were actually talking about drug zombies, and boom, like right on schedule, as if it's the Truman Show or something. We almost and swerve and kept going. I'm like, wow, that could have changed
Well,
our lives
drug
right then.
zombie.
We could literally be in prison right now because of a drug zombie
Well, but
stepped out in
that.
front of us.
And this gets me to a point that drug zombies, as you call them, they wreck businesses too. Small businesses that have these employees that are doing drugs, they destroy businesses. And they just it's more than families, it's businesses, it's communities, it's so much. And because I know, so we all know people who are druggies, and how
Everybody.
destructive it's so destructive it is. And you're right that the smaller drugs lead to that, but it's just about, it's hard because I am about freedom. And so you want to balance you, but I'm also about responsibility and discipline. And
Right.
so how do you balance that out? And if you're sitting there doing,
Stigmatize them. Stigmatize them. Stigmatize them. Like they're, when I smell dope on somebody, I have nothing to do with them again, right? And I'm telling them that if you come up to me and you smell of alcohol, you smell of dope, I will not take you to the border. I will not waste my time on you. I'm busy with serious people, right? And that's my freedom. I
I
have a
love
freedom of
that.
negotiation. I have a freedom
Yeah.
to stigmatize, right? I will not take you with me to the border. And
But
I'll
I
ask
still
them.
love you, but you got to get your crap together. You're a
Yeah,
Green
get your stuff
Beret.
together, right?
You're a Green Beret in the, right? You're what was
Was.
your back? You were a Green. How do you compare like Green Berets to like Navy SEALs, for example?
It's very different. I mean, it's like, you know, Air Force versus Navy. I mean, what I trained to do on my two A teams was parachute into Poland and fight Soviets, right? We also did a lot of training on actually causing civil wars and that sort of thing and fighting civil wars. And so, I mean, it's a different thing, right? They
What unit
overlap on their
is
missions and stuff, but
what
it's their,
unit? What
I was
for
in,
what military?
I was in the 10th Special Forces Group, right?
What is it part of the Air Force, Marine,
Oh,
or
gracias.
it's part of the
Army.
Army? The Green
So
Berets, the Army. They
yeah,
all
this is.
have their elite divisions, and the Green Berets are the Army. The Navy SEALs are navies. What does
Yeah,
the Air Force have?
they have pararescue, which is
Okay.
incredibly well trained, but that's combat stuff, right? And that's different, right? And I've been out with them quite a bit in Afghanistan, actually. Very serious people. I mean, if you are a young person and you want to do something super serious, go Air Force pararescue, and you'll get an you won't believe it. A lot of people don't
It's
realize
super
how much
serious.
combat the Air Force actually does on the ground. I was literally on a lot of combat missions with the Air Force guys on the ground, right? And well, there's JTACs, that's one thing, and then there's also the pararescue guys. I would do their, you know, in their PAVOC helicopters and all this stuff. They were out, you know, doing getting CASAVAC, and it was just amazing. I mean, the Air Force has some very serious special operations people that almost nobody seems to know about. But where Green Berets came from was after World War II, there was something called the OSS in World War II, the Office of Strategic Services. After World War II, the United States wanted to have a capability that would be able to do things that were outside of uniform and inside of uniform. So two different organizations formed from that. One was called Green Berets. That's what I was in. And the other was called Central Intelligence Agency, right? So the OSS went that way, Green Berets and CIA. And then later, you know, the SEALs came along and that sort of thing. And
Well,
then
the
finally,
Navy's
Delta Force and all that.
and Delta Force, that's no, who, what is the Delta Force part of?
Delta Force is in the Army. And Delta Force is, I would say, the most elite of the sort of door kickers or doing very serious kinetic operations on a small unit level. That would be, in my view, that would be Delta Force. And they're, you know, the SEALs are trying to constantly compare themselves to everybody in the world, but Delta Force is actually the ones that are mostly very quiet. A lot of Green Berets go into Delta Force. A lot of my friends ended up in Delta Force, and they go back and forth. And you know, and SEALs can go. You can SEALs can go into Delta Force. You have to change from the Navy to the Army, but
Sure.
some do it. And a lot of Rangers go into Delta Force. Army Rangers are like super sort of infantry Rangers. I would recommend any young person that wants to go into special operations, the best way to do it, generally speaking, if you're going to especially go big later, if you think you might, would be to go into Rangers first, because then you'll get a lot of this, a lot of the sort of mathematics of special operations, small unit tactics and leadership and that sort of thing. A lot of the best Green Berets that I saw were Rangers before, right? But I went straight to Green Berets, did not go into Rangers. But a lot of the serious Delta Force guys came through Rangers or came through Green Berets. Some come through SEALs, some come through other units. I mean, they'll take anybody to try out, right? I mean, you can be a cook and you can try out for Delta Force because they're looking for the right material, right? They're looking for the right sort of person.
It's
And
a mindset, isn't it? It's a
a lot of it's about mindset. Like, don't quit teamwork, but you can operate as an individual.
Yep.
Very intelligent. Think for yourself, but also can think of a team, can take orders, can give orders, right? It's a kind of a the most ideal, say, Green Beret or Delta guy or whatever. They're pretty uncommon, the most ideal ones actually, because you can imagine even within these units there's sort of a hierarchy, and the most ideal ones typically actually don't like the Army or the Navy too much. Like a lot of the serious SEALs, they might not actually like the Navy. A lot of the serious Delta Force and Green Beret, they don't really like the Army, and
Because they're really good, solid people. It's hard to, some of my best interviews are with, the Green Berets or with, I've done quite a bit with Navy SEALs, but I like the ones, the top ones that just understand, they live what they believe, and it's a quiet leadership.
Yeah, especially you'll get that a lot more from Delta and SF guys.
It's incredible.
Like follow me type stuff, right? And but anyway, not to go into that. The bottom
No, I
line is
love this. I
we're
love
in a
that
state of
stuff.
war. We are in a state of war, right? And there's many weapons being used in this war. The biggest weapon is information war,
It's a
like
fifth
psychological.
generation. It's
Yeah,
different.
psychological warfare is a subset of information war, and the grease of psychological operations is intoxicants, whether that be alcohol or whatever, and they're very effective. And this is nothing new. It goes literally back to the Bible, right? I mean, like literally back to the Bible, right? And so none of these things that we're facing are new. And again, I read old books constantly, and I keep constantly coming across where Spaniards or somebody comes through, the Chinese come through or whatever, and they get everybody all drugged up, right? And they do it with specific intent.
Well, it's mind control, right? It's
Right.
controlling their minds. But they have more sophisticated weaponry now with high tech and frequency to actually do some mind control.
Oh yeah. I mean mind control has been a thing since I don't know when. Again, it fades to gray. The further
From Roman time, I mean,
yeah.
beginning of time
Well,
with yeah, but still.
interestingly, last night we were studying together. Every night my team gets together and we do our end of the day briefing, and then we study, right? We brief what did you see today, and then we compare notes, and then we study, right? So last night we were studying, and one of the topics that we talked about is because we were talking about the canal, actually, how the two soldiers were sent down here, a captain and a lieutenant, out of uniform to do certain things, and da 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 da. This would be about 1903 or so, and anyway, one of the things that we just kind of pops up sometimes in our study sessions is like, where did the first hippies and cults come from? This subject came up, believe it or not, in the book. Also in the Path Between the Seas, which is about the history of the Panama Canal. The Path Between the Seas is an incredibly important and good book. And the Path Between the Seas talks about this group at Harvard in 1843, which were basically a bunch of hippies, right? That were fruitarians, that were eating only fruit, right? They called it Fruitland. They called it
Fruitarian.
Fruitland because the earliest I had found hippies in the United States was more like 1890s and 1880s, right? When I was definitely finding, like, hey, there's actually hippies in the United States. You see the World War II movies, like Kelly's Heroes. There's the hippies, in Kelly's Heroes, and portraying hippies in World War II. But they actually go back at least to the 1880s and 1890s. But then we just found a mention yesterday about they called them, it was called Fruitland, Harvard, 1843. And I think it may have started in 1842-ish, that little
That's
cult
super.
there. And it continued on. But anyway, not to go into this, but
No, that's interesting too. I mean, I wonder what it does to your body when you just eat fruit, but keep going.
Steve Jobs and they were into the fruit. I studied cults quite a lot, actually. When I was in Special Forces, I started realizing that there's a lot of things you have to study to be a serious Green Beret, and kinetics are just one of them. Like, weapons and explosives and all that. That's just part of it, right? You also need to really deep dive into anthropology. And a lot of the old timers were be in their 40s, the old timers were like, they were like, now the old timers has a different connotation now, but the old timers would be like, you need to study cults and world religions. And I'm like, why would I want to study that? I mean, my job is to, kill Russians, and they're like, well, you'll see, because as you evolve in this world that we're in, if you stay in special forces or go off to do something else later, then you will benefit greatly by having studied as much as you can in anthropology. And I took that to heart, and I have now studied a lot on anthropology, and I tracked down cults, and I lived with a cult in California for a while, all in the service of studying, doing this sort of study. I tracked down cults in India. One cult that I tracked down, some Americans had joined and were cannibals. They were straight up cannibals. It was a cult
Eating
called
people?
Aqua. Yeah. And one of the main guys, his name was Gary Rayburn Stevenson. He was born on December 3rd, 1950, in Houston, Texas. I tracked him down. And Gary, I tracked him to, I called him GTC, Gary the Cannibal, which would make him very upset. Stop calling me GTC. You're just a redneck from Florida, he would say. Anyway, I'd be like, okay, Gary. He's like, don't call me Gary. My name's Kapalnath. He changed his name. And I would say, listen, Gary, anyway, we talked about how did he evolve from a Texas Scot-Irish type guy, or Scottish in his view, into his dad was an army officer in World War II, stationed in Papua New Guinea. His uncle was stationed in India. He told me all these stories. They turned out to be true. I mean, his daughter did a DNA test for me. I tracked down the whole family, I mean, it was
Wow.
all true, right? But Gary, the cannibal, actually had become a fruitarian, right, in Hawaii. And he told me about it. And he actually, oh, it's a huge story. It's the most amazing story ever. But anyway, I tracked part of that cult down in Sonoma, California, and I lived with them. Then I went back to
But you
Hawaii, researching
lived
more, and
with,
back to
hold on,
India.
you lived with the fruitarians, or did you live with the cannibals?
They were cannibals, but they weren't doing any cannibalism there, to my knowledge. They never did it in
Okay.
front of me in California. They never did it at all. But they'll rub human ashes on their bodies and things like that. The study of cults is like the study of mathematics. You can never, it's an investment. The more that you understand mind control techniques, cults, and that sort of thing, you can build your own resiliency against them, right? As somebody who took being Green Beret very seriously, especially after I left, is when it really started, right? I've studied mind control techniques for years. I've studied cults and these sorts of things, and it's very important. It's like a mar it is a martial art, right? That's why when you see me going after the drug so hard, people think I'm against freedom. It's the opposite. If you're addicted to drugs, you are a slave, just like you're a debt
That's
slave
right.
if you owe $200,000 in student debt,
Yep.
and that's why you're prescribing all these death jabs, because you got to pay your bills, right? I mean, so there's many sorts of slavery. And one of the things I found is that most people actually want to be slaves. I've seen that in cultures around the world, right? Most people want to be told what to do. And then there's a few of us who don't want to be told what to do. Like, I don't want to be told you can't do drugs. I don't do them. And I don't want to be told I can't talk bad about people who do drugs,
That's
right? I don't, you know?
the problem. Like, I don't
Yeah.
want to be told I can't do drugs, but I'm like, but you shouldn't be doing them because they're so
Yeah.
bad.
But I'm going to
Yeah.
stigmatize you just like you're going to
I
stigmatize
love this.
me.
Yeah.
You're going to call me a boomer. Okay, stigmatize me. I'm a boomer. And you're a drug head. You're a worthless,
So
stinking
great.
drug
Yeah.
head. I don't want you around me. You're going to steal everything, right? That's what I'm going to say about you when you're not here and when you are here, right? You're worthless. That's what I'm going to say. I'm using my freedom, right? That I actually fought for. And if you would stop defending your bong and defend our border, we may actually save our country, right? There's a lot of weapons that are being deployed against us, right? And one of them is intoxicants. And you got people like Doper Joe Rogan. I've been many times. I was on with Alex Jones. Alex was like, I can get you on the Joe Rogan. We were live. And I was like, Alex, I'm not going on Doper Joe's show. You could find whatever I actually said. It's
Yeah.
very similar to what I'm telling you. I'm like, I'm not going on the show with Doper Joe. I've been offered numerous times to go on with him. I don't want to go on with a doper. Now, people that are dopers are going, ah, but he brings on all these great guests and all this stuff. And I'm like, yeah, I know he does. That's called the draw. They draw you in. He is a clear information operation, right? You got the space boy, Elon Musk, who is a clear drug addict and who talks about it, smoking dope with Joe Rogan in front of millions of young people. That was an attack on the United States. That was a direct attack by Space Boy, who says that he's going to put chips in our brains. He's addicted to ketamine. He says it. He has said it openly that he should, that his, that Elon Musk has said openly that his investors should hope that he stays on his prescription to ketamine, right? He has openly said this. It's published. It's out there. He says it. He sticks by it, right? The guy, okay, here's Doper Joe Rogan and Elon Musk. Elon Musk, Mr. Dope Smoker, pushed people to take the death jabs, right? He pushed people to take it. He said the science is unequivocal, verbatim, on the death jabs. He's like, he studied this stuff up and the science is unequivocal. Basically, he's saying take the death
He
jab. They're
didn't
not
study
vaccines, right?
squat, so he's smart
Right.
enough.
Well, it turns out that the smartest guy in the world, Mr. Dopehead, was wrong. He was wrong. So am I supposed to believe him? Now, Elon Musk, space boy, who wants to put chips in our minds and who says that he's the guy behind all the chopsticks and all this for the Starship, which is, I love SpaceX stuff, actually. And, but because I've always been into space since I was a little boy. I mean, I was there watching Apollo 11 launch when I was five. And I'm totally about, let's go, But is Elon Musk the guy that he's advertised to be? That's a separate issue. And it's clear that Elon Musk is a face. He is a condom for the globalist, right? Elon Musk said he could not get to his gigafactory in Germany to visit his gigafactory without taking the vaccine, right? Death jab. So he took two, he said, right? Now, okay. So the guy that says that he can get us to Mars, put brain chips, boring company and Tesla and all this stuff, all these different things. This super duper dude still can't get to Germany without taking the death jab. Now I was there with Masako Ganahan in Germany, and we're like, Space Boy can't get to Germany without taking the death jab, but we're in Germany and we didn't take it. We were in Germany at the same time. We went to Germany multiple times, numerous times, without taking the death jab. We were all over Europe without taking the death jab. But the guy who's supposed to be the smartest dude in the world, who got the wrong answer when it came to taking the death jab, he said, take it. He said, take it. He said clearly to take it. That is the most consequential decision so far, probably in human history, was pushing the death jab, right? That is cannot be swept under the rug because the body count is only growing and the lump in the growth. And the rug is getting bigger, right?
It's not
That guy is
possible.
not who he says he is. He is not that super ultra brilliant guy doing this. He is clearly a condom for somebody who's behind all this.
Well, that's an excellent, you just summed it up so well because it's just not possible for someone who's that smart to claim, or to, it's impossible for them to claim it, but it's not possible for them to do the research and then come to the conclusion it's safe. That's just not possible for a smart
And
person to
with
do
all
that.
his jets and rockets, he can't get to Germany. He's got private
That's,
jets and he can't get to Germany. Listen, if I were Elon Musk, if I'm this super duper ultra smart guy, alpha guy, and all this stuff, hey man, I can do all these things. I'm space guy. I'm on Twitter at 2 in the morning, right? Doing drugs or whatever. I don't know what he's doing. But
playing his video game.
okay, so let's say I have a multi-billion-dollar, yeah, exactly. He knows all about anime and all this crap. How do you have time to know about anime and stuff?
And
Where's your
spends
skateboard?
80% of his time being the lead engineer in all these companies, because that's what
Oh
he
yeah,
claims too.
and where's your skateboard? He's probably a professional skateboarder and all this stuff too, So I mean, all these guys are always like, "Yeah, I'm a skateboarder," It's like, okay, whatever, man. So, listen, if I had a multi-billion-dollar factory in Germany, right, and the German economy was really happy to have it, right, and the German government was really happy to have it, and if the German government said to me, and I'm in charge of that factory, you have to take the death jab before you come visit your factory. I would say, re-examine your thoughts. Today's Friday. That factory will be closed on Monday. Do you understand? I will
That's
be
right.
there Monday. I will land at an airport. If I am not allowed to get off of my jet and go into my factory, I will close it. That is how you play hardball, right? That's what I would do. That's not what he did. He took the death jabs. That's what he says anyway. And he got sick and blah, 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 blah. We believe
Okay,
you,
well then
Leon.
what do you
We believe you.
think?
Like, I'm
Okay.
really going to believe a drug addict. So, drug addicts, what do they perpetually do? Lie. Drug addicts lie. That's what they do, right? Alcoholics and drug
You
addicts
can't run
perpetually lie,
company.
right?
Can he really truly run everything he's running, doing what he
No.
does? I mean,
But the math
it's
doesn't
just
add
this,
up.
the
It just.
math doesn't add up. That's exactly right. I don't know what's going on there. But now the masses, during this inauguration, they would on the, I was just listening to the radio this morning, and when they showed pictures of Donald Trump's Barron Trump, people would cheer, which is great. He's a young man, he's quiet. People would cheer. He got the most cheers. The other person that got the most cheers when the cat came up was Elon Musk. So people love Elon Musk.
Because he's been groomed. He is a part in a big movie, basically, right? And they all reinforce each other, of course, and they go on each other's shows and da 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 da. This is all part of the great kayfabe, right? A kayfabe is like a wrestling, fake wrestling, right? That's exactly what it is. This is a kayfabe. This is the greatest show on earth. Right. And there's nothing new about this. It's just like in all these old books you read, let's say Creature from Jekyll Island by G. Edward Griffin. He talks about how in the 1800s, in the early 1900s, people would not you wouldn't just buy the New York Times. You'd just buy the editor. Right. I mean, you
Yeah.
wouldn't buy the whole jet. You'd buy the pilot. Right. You know what I mean? You don't to hijack the jet. You don't need to buy the jet. You just get the pilot. Right. And it's the same. The path between the seas is the same. It's all these old books. It's always about there's always a wrestling match for the press, for the microphone, for
Blackmail is the currency of the powerful, and they've known that forever.
mice. It's called mice, right? Mice. Money, ideology, coercion, ego. Money, ideology, coercion, ego. Mice. Those are the four main cheeses, right? Money, ideology, coercion, ego. Like Trump is ego and money, right? That's his cheeses. He loves those bookends, right? And Elon Musk, I'm not sure, he's clearly on drugs, as is common. But keep in mind, we've got people that are working hard to destroy the United States, Canada, Europe, and
That's
you
right.
want these super role models out there smoking dope. You want Elon Musk and you want Joe Rogan and all, and you want the dopers, of course. They're gonna go, well, look, you're making a mistake, Michael. Why don't you go on? You know how many times I've heard people say, you're making a mistake. Don't you understand? You could reach his audience. I'm like, don't you understand? I have a little hatchet and he has a big tree. Chop, chop. Every day, I chop a little bit out of Joe Rogan's tree, right? Every day, wood chips fly, right? I'm not going on a show, right? I'm not going to help him. I'm going to keep exposing him for what he is. We are in a state of war. These man boys, you know, he's a big UFC guy, you know, the skateboarder guys and all this stuff, they're man children. In Japan, I know somebody who calls them bearded boys. He's a Japanese man, Masako Gunaha's father. He calls them bearded boys. They're boys in men's bodies. I mean, they're juveniles. They're in their 30s, they're in their 20s, 30s, 40s, and they're acting like children. Like, it's really cool to come on and smoke dope with Elon Musk in front of millions of young people. The moment I saw that was an instant change. I had been suspicious of Elon Musk over a period of time. In the beginning, I thought he was actually a serious guy. I thought he was really that guy. I thought he was really, wow, this is an amazing guy. That's an ideal immigrant right there, right? Then as time went on, I'm like, math isn't adding up here. Something doesn't feel right. And then I saw him doing the dope smoke thing with Joe Rogan. That was it. I'm like, that's a clear attack. This is what I do, right? Information war, psychological operations. I'm doing war around the world, right? I've written three books on Chinese information war. Again, they're only in Japanese, right? I see this all over the world. I've traveled all over the world. I've seen this, what they're doing. That was an attack. That was an attack just like launching a missile into the US heartland. And they did it. And ever since that time, that was, if you look at my treatment of Elon Musk and Joe Rogan, when those two got on and smoked dope, that was it. That was attack. I've attacked ever since, right? And I will not stop. It's very clear what they're doing, right? They showed you their faces. The man behind the curtain has showed you exactly who he is. Elon Musk is not the guy that's doing all these amazing things. He is just a face.
I would agree with that. That's so you are awesome. I love you. I know why people love you. Where can people follow you?
Darien Gap, I'm going to go tomorrow. I'm going to be out with a bunch of people on the Panama Canal. We're going through the locks tomorrow. And then the next day, I'll probably head back down into the jungle in the Darien Gap. So if you want to come down to the Darien Gap,
I am gonna come down there. I got to figure out, clear my schedule and figure out a way to get down there.
yeah, it's quite serious. Now, if Trump is very serious, Tom Homan called me a few weeks ago. As have some other people whose names you definitely know and some you probably don't, about closing the borders and doing these other sorts of things. And I've told them all, if you're really serious about closing the borders, we can do it. It can be done. There'll be some that leak through. We get it. But you can close 99% of it, right? But one of the things you have to do is defund the United Nations. You have to defund the United Nations, right? And I mean defund, defang, and dismantle, right? Because the United Nations and the United States are the ones keeping the, if you close the Darien Gap, which is child's play, a very smart captain could close the Darien Gap. You don't need much resources, actually. It's the Darien Gap. I mean, the Darien Gap is your greatest resource in closing the Darien Gap. You need a few more helicopters and some better communications. And that's about it, really, because it's the Darien Gap. And they have to go up Highway 1 to get here, which is a long, giant linear ambush that goes over lots of bridges, right? You know what I mean? It's super easy to close the Darien Gap. But if you close the Darien Gap, that doesn't close Bahamas, that doesn't close Nicaragua, where people flowing through there, and Mexico, doesn't close Canada, more than 5,000 miles of border. It doesn't close people flying in that the government's actually doing. You have to go after the United Nations, right? Because remember, our partners are being destroyed too. Our partners in Europe are being destroyed. Our partners in Japan, Thailand, the IOM, which is the International Organization for Migration, is the big boss. That's the engine room of the United Nations, is the IOM. It's run, the North American operations are run by Amy Pope in New York. She's an American. She should be arrested, right? For human trafficking. Their other big office is down the road from me here in Panama City, in City of Knowledge, in the Ciudad del Saber, City of Knowledge. It's the former U.S. Army South headquarters, Fort Clayton. Those who, your father almost certainly was at Fort Clayton. You were probably at Fort Clayton when you were in Panama, like almost certainly. You at least passed through. It is now the UN headquarters, right? And it looks like, we're not sure about this, but it looks like the UN may be, I'm not certain about this. Let us research it a little bit more. But they may be getting prepared to move more of their operations to Panama. Now, all we have to do is defund the United Nations because the United States is the biggest funder of the United Nations, and then start dismantling them, kick them out of the United States, start arresting people that were involved in human trafficking. This will cause them, they've got an office in Buenos Aires, IOM does. We were just in it, Misako and I, a couple months ago in about November. We walked in and asked for a job, actually, in the IOM, and they said no with the recent election of Donald Trump, that they were afraid that United Nations funding would be cut, and therefore United Nations was doing a hiring freeze, right? Now, we need to dismantle every aspect of the United Nations, and I mean spick and span. Otherwise, like communists, they will reconstitute themselves like seeds that were left in the ground, right? You can chop all the surface down and the roots are still there. We need to pull them out by the roots, right? Every United Nations office, and that includes everybody that they funded, like HIAS, Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, Catholic Charities, Presbyterian Services, all these different groups, they need to be pulled out by the roots. They use these religious fronts in so many different countries, Mexico, Texas, down here in Panama. They don't use Catholic Charities here, not openly. If they do, I haven't found them. But they use HIAS here, Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, and they use them in Colombia as well. But the bottom line is we need to pull them out by the roots. But if we cut their funding, they're going to immediately start to wither. And
That's
also,
right.
if we start arresting even a few of them and we start letting it known, we're grabbing your records, right? And if you're involved, it's best to be out of the United States, right? And it's best to be out of anywhere we can extradite you from. because you've been invading our country, right? And you've been involved in helping terrorists get inside of our country, right? I see people from all over the world. I mean, you won't believe it. Maybe 150 countries coming through just the Darien Gap. I've been across the entire U.S. southern border. It took months to do it. I've been from SpaceX at one end of the border to San Diego. I've been across the entire border. It takes months to do that. And some of that was on the Mexican side, right? And I've been up on the Canadian border, but not as extensively. Bahamas, of course, Morocco, Lithuania, all over Europe, Japan. I'm watching our allies be dismantled. Go for the United Nations. Take them out. Defund them, defang them, dismantle them.
How are you being funded if you have a whole team? Do you have supporters? I just want to know because people need to support you. This is really great work.
Yeah, I'm terrible at fundraising. That's the worst thing I do. I'm very good at some things, but I think it's my Southern upbringing actually gets in the way of further success. I'm actually very bad about it. Whereas other people that can sing and dance, like I rarely ask for funding, but I do sometimes because I need it. Since 2005, when I was in the Iraq war, I'd been there for, you know, 5, 6, 7, or 8 months. And finally, I'm like, I can't afford to be here. It's like $1,000 a day between SATCOMs and everything. And I was running out of money. And so I said, you know, I'll put up one of those PayPal things. And I did. And it was successful. So ever since 2005, in about maybe mid-2005, I've been going only on donations, right? And that's the only way that I do it. And so if people donate, it helps me expand. If they don't donate, I contract just like the United Nations would. If you want more of my team and me, and actually a lot of what I do, you don't know it actually came from me. Like I've taken 50 or 60 people into the Darien Gap. Ann Vandersteel, she reaches millions of people. We've been all over the place together. Misako Ganaha reaches millions of people. And others, Anthony Rubin, Oscar Blue, I've taken them into the Darien Gap. They're all hard workers. Everybody I take down is a hard worker, right? And everyone, Anthony Rubin got kidnapped actually up in Mexico, but luckily got released. Anthony Rubin, man, he got kidnapped and I was tracking his tracker, right? And I'm like, uh-oh, something went wrong with Andy because I could see he was off of our, you know, because I was watching him every like 10, 15 minutes and suddenly his tracker went off course. And so I was like, uh-oh, he may have been kidnapped. And actually, as it turns out that he was kidnapped and he got released, they smashed his gear and did all kinds of other things. But anyway, so he immediately is back in the United States and he immediately gets another phone. We're on the phone and he was in like a Best Buy or something, getting more camera gear to go straight to Mexico. I love that guy. So this is the kind of people I take down there. He's walked through the Darien Gap like Oscar Blue has like 6 times or something. I don't know. Oscar Blue is like a maniac in the Darien Gap. Oscar Blue is worth following. Anthony Rubin, when he captured, let's say, got a document in Mandarin, 200 pages, had it translated to English, and it described the entire route that the Chinese are taking from Ecuador through Colombia, through the Darien, all the way up. So Anthony was following that route, actually, and he almost made it. He was right across the river, Rio Grande, from SpaceX, where he got kidnapped, actually. But he had been tracking that Chinese route all the way up. And so anyway, he stayed in their hotels and that sort of thing. So we know quite a lot about what's going on. But Anthony Rubin is at muckraker.com, muckraker.com. And I see Taylor Kramer. Actually, we took him down to where did we take him? Took him to Mexico, took him to Guatemala, Belize, all over Texas. And Taylor Kramer is doing amazing work. We took Laura Loomer down there. We took Brett Weinstein, took Dr. Chris Martinson, a couple congressmen, a bunch of Intel people, just lots of people. I've taken Daily Wire to places in Texas and Epoch Times numerous times into the Darien Gap and in different places, and including Hong Kong when the fighting was going on. So yeah, it's all off donations. And without donations, if I had the donations that the United Nations has, they would not even exist. You would forget they exist.
That's right. Focusing the donations on the people that are actually trying to really help us be free. So just get me that link and I will include it on the bottom. I'll have it on the screen during this video. so people can donate to you, because that is really important. I also want to get a copy of your book in Japanese, and I want to get that translated for you.
Oh, I
So
appreciate it. It's three different books actually. And I get, and it's about Chinese information war. And I actually went to China researching it. I don't think they'll let me back in after they kicked me out of Hong Kong. But I wouldn't go back to China at this point without diplomatic, like cover,
immunity,
not cover, but
yeah,
with actually like, this is me, but I'm coming with the US government. Not
yes.
that I wouldn't want to be with the US government, but that's about the only way I'm going to be able to get back into China and get out safely, I think.
Well, the people there are great. I gotta say, I really enjoyed the people when I was there. I had a wonderful time, but I could tell that there was a fear, and we just the people shouldn't have to live with a fear, and they're also very shielded. That the information that they're allowed to see is very shielded. They can't, they don't have apps like we have. You don't have this communication. But that also gives them an advantage. They control their people, what they see, and then they're flooding us with, and it's not just, it's a lot of people flooding us with propaganda, as you say, with the Elon Musk and these globalists and the UN and the World Economic Forum. This stuff is coming from everywhere.
It is. Again, information war is old and highly developed. So by the time all of us were born, by the time our super great grandparents were born, this sort of information warfare, cult making, all this were already very, very highly developed. It was an art form long before any of us were born, right? And so by the time we're born, we're basically born into a jungle of this stuff. And first, you have to recognize I am actually in it, but where's the zipper to this IMAX, you know? And
That's right.
then you come out of one IMAX and you're like, hey, I made it out. And you're like, I'm in another IMAX.
That's right. Yes.
And so then you want to help your people out. And one of the main ways I want people to come out is to be of clean, clear mind, like get rid of the intoxicants, because we can't communicate on these things when you're a slave to your addictions, right? And our enemies are using these addictions as actual weapons, literal weapons that they will destroy our country with, right? And like truly destroy it.
They
The
have no
screen,
mercy. No
yeah,
mercy.
like
Bam.
we're
Yep.
being invaded by tens of millions of people. There's so many weapons being used, right? We should come back on in the next week or so. After I get back from the Darien Gap, I'll give you a latest update. And that, I mean, if you have time,
Perfect.
I
No,
know you're busy.
perfect. I want you back on a regular basis. This is absolutely
Let's do
wonderful.
it.
Absolutely. This is great. Thank you so much for joining the program. I just do great work. I love it.
Thank
Thank
you
you.
very, very much.